This is a Dice World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
I'm Burr Martin from the Burr Martin Experience podcast. Now, as an A-list celebrity...
Brad Pitt is an A-list celebrity.
As a B-list celebrity...
Nicolas Cage.
As a C-list celebrity...
David Hasselhoff.
As a D-list celebrity...
Shia LaBeouf. All right,
as a D-plus celebrity, join me here on the Pants Pending Network, where I discuss everything from comedians, kids, news stories of the week, and even down to asking... What the heck was that foil S thing Superman threw at Non during Superman 2? So make your week better. Look, I'm a celebrity, and I'm doing a free podcast. You know what? You're welcome. That's the Burr Martin Experience. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, or even right here on the PantsPending.com network.
Well, hello there. I'm Andrew from Pants Pending Studios, and I want to share with you from the good book of never-ending random discussion.
Again, I trust you are putting your valuables in the center of your living rooms as previously instructed. Good Lord, I hope that's previously instructed.
The never-ending random discussion is a collection of funny and interesting people sitting down to be random.
Why is she naked?
Those eyes are so piercing.
It's...
I forgot that she had tiny little animal eyes, like beady little black eyes. Oh dear God.
Why is she... Why is she covered in frosting? That's weird. Good. That's like a cake thing. That's not for donuts.
It's your favorite flavor.
Anything can happen, and anything does happen. Not that I'm sexist, but kitchens need to stay in women. I went with it.
Kitchens need to stay in women. That's Andrew Reisenhuber, 2016.
Find the show at celebrategeek.com/nerd. Tune in and thank me later. Pants pending.
Listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I completely agree with you, Deez.
Get ready for The Social Hour.
Live from Kettle House Brewery in Missoula, Montana, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, owner of Kettle House Brewery, Susie Rizza, and their taproom manager, Ryan Weingerber, with special guest co-host, Hannah Tilly, and now your host, still angry that they make all the breweries close at just 8 p.m. in Montana, Deez Casillas.
Malib Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. We are broadcasting live from Kettle House Brewery in Missoula, Montana. With me, special guest co-host, we have Hannah Tilly. You guys know Hannah. How's it going, Hannah?
Hey, guys. Good. Thanks for having me, Deez.
Of course. And we are sitting down here with Susie Rizza, co-owner of Kettle House Brewery. Thanks for having us, Susie. Appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for contacting us.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
We've talked a couple times, tried to make this happen. I'm glad we could finally make it work. I've been coming to Missoula. Well, I used to live here, but Kettle House Brewery I've been coming to for a long time. So I'm happy to be able to sit down with you guys and finally chat with you.
Yeah.
So now you were just telling us before we started that you guys are about to celebrate, as this comes out, you guys have already celebrated your 22nd anniversary.
Yes.
Now that's a pretty big accomplishment. That's one of the oldest breweries in Missoula, right?
Yes, Byron is the oldest brewery in Missoula, Byron Brewing, and then Big Sky Brewing, and we both opened in 1995. But
oh, really?
They opened as a brewery. We opened as a brew on premise.
Okay.
I don't know if you know about those or have heard of them, but it used to be, we used to have these six copper kettles in the windows over there, and people could come in and like pick a recipe, get the ingredients, and brew their own beer.
Oh, wow.
And then 2 weeks later, they'd come back and bottle it. And so it was super fun for them. But it didn't really pay the bills.
Sure.
So after, do you want to hear my story?
Yeah, that's why we're here.
Okay, so then about 3 years later, 1998, we lobbied the legislature. At the time, we could only give samples away. We couldn't actually sell beer to drink.
Okay.
So, which is, it's not a good business plan to give away your product.
Sure, yeah.
It doesn't really work.
Yeah, that's how comedy is. It's a lot of giving it away for no pay. Right. It happens sometimes.
Well, maybe you should lobby the legislature. Yeah, and require. I feel like that. Anyway, so we did that, and so in '99 we became able to sell pints across the bar, which is great. But we're limited to three. People are limited to 48 ounces per person per day,
right,
which is 3 16-ounce pints. And we have to stop serving at 8 as a brewery, as a taproom.
Yeah.
So, the other little funky law that was a law, but now it's not, is that if you brewed more than 10,000 barrels a year, and a barrel's 2 kegs, so that's 20,000 kegs, to give you some idea, you could not have a taproom. You couldn't have a taproom where you sold for on-premise consumption.
And that's why... That's why Big Sky Brewery is limited,
exactly,
correct?
Exactly. Yeah. That's why Big Sky Brewing has never had like a taproom like this where you can sit and drink a pint. They can give samples away.
Yeah.
They can sell a bunch of t-shirts. They can sell growlers to go. You can do everything to go.
Right.
And that's also why Byron Brewery here in Missoula has purposefully kept themselves under 10,000 barrels a year so they could keep their taproom. But the law changed this legislative session to 60,000 barrels.
Oh, wow.
So now all the breweries are like, There is no brewery in Montana that brews more than 60,000.
Right.
So everybody is going to be able to have a tap room.
So it's good.
And well, it goes into effect in October.
So I think last time I was in town, that must have been pretty recent. Last time I was in town, I feel like there was talk of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it went through. That's good.
It did.
So does that affect the difference in how many pints you guys can serve people also?
It does not.
And to me, that's such a weird... That's a very interesting law because I have been to many states and many breweries, and this is the only state I've ever been in where that is the case. All other states are just kind of unlimited until we think you shouldn't have any more.
Right. Here, it doesn't have anything to do with, we don't think you should have more than three because then you'll be, you know, inebriated, whatever. It has to do with back in 98, I wish I could remember the exact year, I could keep saying 98, 99,
right,
whatever it was.
Yeah.
So tavern owners here, if you have a full-on liquor license, that costs you, in Missoula, probably up around $800,000.
Yes.
And back 20 years ago, it was more like $1 million.
Yeah.
A brewing license is $500 a year.
Got it.
So when the breweries back in the late 90s were asking, you know, could we please sell somebody a pint in our brewery so that they have to pay for it, the tavern owners weren't super psyched about it. They viewed it as being a little bit unfair.
Like, sure.
We have this huge expensive license. How come you don't have to do that and you can sell alcohol to people?
Yeah.
So that was the compromise that came of that, that we will only give them three, we will only sell them three, and we'll stop at 8. So we're not infringing on your late night.
Right.
You know, like, they'll come for a little after work beer, and then we'll feed them out to the bars.
Yeah, and then you prime them, you lube them up.
Sure.
And send them out.
Yeah, they have their pre-dinner drink, and then we send them out.
Perfect.
And we actually prefer it this way. We've never really had to kick anybody out.
Yeah.
Maybe two or three people in the last 20 years. We don't have a bouncer.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, it's like 3 and 8 o'clock, and you're done.
So. Would you, if there was an option to change the rules and you could go to serving till 2, no limitations on serving, but your license would cost a little bit more, would you take that deal?
I would have to say no, but the only reason I say no is because our brewery in particular, is more focused on production. We put our beer in cans, we sell it to our distributors, and then our distributors send it out to the world.
Yeah.
And that's the focus. It didn't used to be the focus. We used to be, you know, just a little taproom community brewery. But now that piece of our business has grown, so we look at the taprooms as like a little incubator. You know, we love having people come in and tell us what beers they think are delicious. And it just gives us ideas for maybe what we'll put in a can next.
Right.
To go out in production. Distribution. So, but we're only in Montana. So I would have to say no. But I think probably a lot of the new breweries that are like taproom only breweries, they don't have production. They just brew beer and people come in and drink it. I think they would take that deal in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Depending on the price.
Sure.
Of the license, of
That's
course.
True. $500,000 is a little price
yeah.
here. So
yeah.
Actually, it's funny. Years ago, I assume, yeah, you've been here for a long time. You probably remember the bar Mr. C's that used to be behind, where Joanne's Fabrics is.
And okay, it was on, yeah.
What's the name of that?
Stevens Center.
Yeah.
Stevens and Brooks.
Exactly. So
was it Mr. C's Hideaway?
Yes.
Okay, I remember it as the Hideaway.
Yep, Mr. Okay. C's Hideaway.
Okay.
And I actually knew the gentleman who owned it.
Okay.
And he, when he finally sold out his liquor license, because Hooters had wanted to come into town for so long, and they finally offered him, I think, like $500,000 for his liquor license. He's like, yep,
sold.
Done deal.
Yeah.
You can have it.
Is that when they closed, when Hooters came to town? Well, Hooters is gone.
I noticed that, yeah. Which is funny because the Hooters in Spokane closed a couple years ago.
Oh, interesting.
Nobody's into Hooters anymore.
I think part of it is when Buffalo...
The restaurant, not the...
Yeah, yeah. Well,
right.
You know, depends on who you ask. Not any... I mean, there's still some people, Hannah.
Let's get Deez's opinion
yeah.
on that.
I'm still a fan. There's one guy hanging on. I think a lot of that has to do with the expansion of Buffalo Wild Wings.
Interesting.
They
did wings.
Yeah.
Hooters did wings.
Yep. And they always kind of end up near the Hooters in towns. And they ended up near Hooters in Spokane.
I think that was a strategic decision on their part.
So.
That was always going to be my claim, my not my claim to fame. My, not at all. I've got the chest for podcasts. It was going to be my get-rich-quick scheme. I was going to go into Hooters and apply, and they were going to take one look at me and go, no, thank you.
Right.
And then I was going to sue them for discrimination.
Yeah.
Because really, I mean, I never understood how they could do that.
Yeah. It's,
would they hire a guy?
I actually wrote a sketch about a guy who, tried to get a job at a Hooters-like place where he was discriminated against. He sued him and he got the job, but he was still forced to wear the hot pants and the tank top and the leg warmers.
Stockings,
yeah.
And the...
So, and had to flirt with the guys to still get tips. It was...
Did he have to wear the low-cut thing with his chest hair?
Right, yeah, just exactly.
Oh, so... That sounds really appetizing.
Yeah, so he won, but nobody else won.
Everybody else lost. Big time.
So you were talking about production with the brewery, and that's a good point. A lot of breweries kind of have different personalities and different things they want.
Yes.
And you find some, you know, like you said, a lot of new breweries are just like, hey, we want a tap room. This is kind of a hobby that I can make money, like at least sustain off of.
Mm-hmm.
But some people are looking at, I've known some breweries that really opened up production heavy. Mm-hmm. That's what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you guys kind of sit somewhere in between, it seems like. Where would you say, with the opening up of your new location, which you want to hear about also, where do you guys think you're going to fall in that mix?
Mm-hmm. I have to start off by saying that I feel like everything that we are today was a total accident. Happy accident now, yes. Before it was a little bit of a train wreck accident, but my husband and I wanted to move back. We both grew up in Montana.
Uh-huh.
We wanted to move back to Montana and make a living somehow. And unless you're a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher, you know, it's really hard to make a living in Montana.
Yeah, or you do construction. You own a construction company,
sure,
maybe. Yeah.
Right, something like that. So we're like, oh, let's open our own business. Great idea. And for the first 10 years, it was so not a great idea because it was horrible. I mean, we, you know, burning through our savings, not making any money, just, you know, all that. And then, so I'm going off on a tangent. Where we see ourselves now is, you know, never say never. I'm not going to sit here and say that that we'll never go out of state, but right now we're really happy being in Montana.
Yeah.
One of our one of my husband's idols is New Glarus Brewing in Wisconsin.
Okay.
They are strictly Wisconsin only.
Interesting. Is that like a hard rule for them? They're
yes.
Like, hey, we represent, this is what we do.
Yep.
And we're the best at it, we do this.
Yep. It's a very on-purpose decision.
Okay.
And, of course, Wisconsin has a way higher population than Montana does. So
sure.
You have to weigh, like, could
they
be
probably
even,
drink a lot, too.
Yeah.
I feel
right,
like that's...
right, because what else, right? No. Yeah, so you have to figure out, is it even sustainable for us to say we're going to stay in Montana? Could we actually sell enough beer to pay the bills?
Yeah.
Basically, to do that. So far, so good. And, you know, we think that there's more room for craft to grow in Montana, even still. With, you know, we have 65-something breweries in Montana, with there are only 1 million people in the state.
Yeah.
But we think that there's still room for craft beer to grow. So... we're kind of happy being in Montana, being really strong in our base of support. You know, it's also a little bit scary with what the craft beer industry is doing right now. It's softening a little bit.
Right.
So it's not necessarily appealing to go, hey, let's, you know, extend ourselves across the country and,
right.
You know, try and open up another brewery or expand our distribution.
Yeah.
Right now.
It is one of those things, too, where, we, you know, as I've been doing this for the last few years going around talking to breweries,
mm-hmm.
you know, that bubble has been coming,
mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not going to burst yet, but you know, I think the cream of the crop and people who are really embedded are going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But there is always that little bit of less is more,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you have the quality ones now. I mean, as I travel, and I mean, literally the first thing I look at when I'm traveling different areas is breweries.
Mm-hmm.
I look at breweries and I just,
yeah.
go and visit breweries and drink their beer, and there's some that are great, some that are fine, and some that are you wonder how they're selling beer,
right? Which is unfortunate, right?
And that takes away from the people that are really
yeah.
good at it.
Yeah.
You know, people like you have been doing it and have a great product.
Because you don't want somebody that's not into craft beer go into one of those breweries and go, oh my god, I don't see the appeal,
right?
Yeah.
And then they
sucks.
Equate it to everyone.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That's not ideal.
Yeah, so you do,
right.
But so you do have a lot of that. But I think especially people like you that have been doing it so long.
Mm-hmm.
And have such a base in Montana,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I think in Montana your base is probably unshakable. You can't lose your footing here. So there is that, you know, you have that. You could be the, what was the name of the brewery in Wisconsin?
New Glarus.
New Glarus.
Mm-hmm.
And you could be the New Glarus of Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe New Glarus will be the Kettle House of Wisconsin.
Hey, there you go. Yeah. No, I think it goes the other. I think the first way was correct.
but is, you know... And you guys, again, did just open a new location, but, you know, is there thought of maybe another tap room in a different city farther away from Montana or Missoula? Or, I mean, you guys have probably looked at distribution outside of Montana, at least.
We've thought about it.
Yeah.
And actually, when we built our new facility in Bonner, and let me go back to the reasons that we did that, because... there may be some perception out there that we just want to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So that's why we built this big new brewery. Well, you're sitting in Myrtle Street right now, which is our, you know, original location, our birthplace. It's leased. We have a 5-year lease that just keeps getting renewed.
Sure.
And, you know, there's been talk of the landlord saying, you know, I think I might want to build something else in this location. Okay, that's not happening. But if it did, we'd be screwed, right?
Yeah.
And then our north side location, we own the bricks, but it's on Montana Rail Link
right,
property.
Yeah.
So the ground is leased. So, and it's very unlikely, but let's say the railroad comes back 10 years from now and says, hey, we want to expand our railroads. You know.
I heard railroads are coming back.
Yeah.
They're getting media.
Right. Invest.
Right. Hey, coal, they're trying to bring coal back, so.
Right.
Who knows?
That's a whole nother podcast. but so we basically, we didn't have room to expand. You know, we were kind of limited in the size. We can't go anywhere.
Right.
So we're like, you know what? We need a spot that's ours, that we have some room to grow if we want to grow, if we need to grow, etc. So we found this 18 acres in Bonner right on the Blackfoot River.
Nice, very
it's,
nice.
The Stimson Lumber Mill closed down years ago, and there's a couple of guys that are kind of revitalizing that whole, they're, you know, property managing it and selling it off, and it's a really cool area. So we now have room to grow.
Sure.
If we want. And it's also a little bit of job security for ourselves and our employees, you know. We want to keep going. We want to keep brewing beer.
Yeah.
So, what was the question?
Sorry.
So, what are we talking about?
No, I think, talking about coal. No, the, is it strictly, so is that your main brew facility now? Is that kind of
it
what's,
is.
So, the, so
that, yep.
That's the main
brew house. That's our production facility.
Perfect. That makes more sense.
Yep.
So, probably allows you to produce a little bit more then.
Yeah, we can produce more, which, you know, we, the distributors have always wanted more, and we've never been able to give it to them.
Sure.
So we can finally say, yes, you can have as much as you want. The other really cool thing is that at both of the two tap rooms we have, Myrtle Street and the North Side, we can now kind of, we're calling it right-sizing the breweries. So over at the North Side, we had these huge tanks, because that used to be our production facility. So if you wanted to brew a beer, you were brewing 100 kegs of it at a time.
Right.
Oh, geez.
Now, we're bringing one of these brew houses over to that, to the North Side, and so we're going to be able to do smaller batches, which is great, because we can do more creative stuff, more beers more often.
Right,
you
some
know,
specialty
it's not
stuff,
like
seasonals.
A bunch of cold smoke.
Yeah.
A bunch of double malt, you know, the stuff that we have in the cans.
And that's always nice, because one of the things I look for in a brewery is, I like, you know, so like, take a brewery that people in Montana will know really well, like Big Sky, obviously.
Yeah.
Is it. So they have a couple beers, they're dialed in, they're consistent, they're always the same.
Mm-hmm.
They're good beers.
Mm-hmm.
But they never come out with anything new.
Mm.
So what I love is beer breweries that are able to do that too,
mm-hmm.
where you can go in and be like, yeah, I know I can get cold smoke,
mm-hmm.
and I know it's great, but also they're
what
trying
else?
Something new. Like, I mean, as a craft beer lover, I'm always looking for new
mm-hmm.
new things. So
mm-hmm.
I mean,
sure.
I have the beers I love, but you always want to find something.
Exactly.
Something new.
And the new girl at the dance is always the one that everybody's looking for.
That's right.
So, yeah, which I get that as a customer of craft beer and a customer of breweries, that makes perfect sense. It makes it difficult for breweries. That's what makes it so competitive for breweries to stay on tap in bars.
Yeah.
Because a salesperson comes in and says, hey, I've got this new IPA. Oh, sweet. Somebody's
yeah.
ripped off tap, and then you're put, you know, that one's put on, and you're like, damn it. So there is pressure to always be doing something new, which is good. I mean, the brewers like it. The brewers
yeah.
love to do new stuff. The customers like it. So,
yeah, to be creative as a brewer and have that freedom to do new things,
mm-hmm.
especially now in this vanguard where people are really, really pushing what they brew with and how they brew and different styles. You know, no one wants to just be doing the same five beers all the time. I mean, to them, it's an art, and there's a lot to it. So,
and we were in that for a while because we were so, you know, we didn't have the tank space to do anything but our three mainstay beers.
Right.
So it'd be like, okay, we're doing a brew fest this summer. What are we going to have on tap? Cold smoke and double hull again, you know, and now it's super fun because we can do all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah.
So that's great. I love that.
Yeah. So what made you, when you guys wanted to move back to Montana and open a business, what made you decide on craft beer?
Well, we, my husband and I make all of our really important decisions with rock, paper, scissors.
Perfect.
So
never fails.
I sort of voted for bagels, and he voted for beer, and he was a home brewer. He learned home brewing when we were living in Colorado, and it's like, oh yeah, let's do this home brewing, this U-brew thing. And I'm like, nah, let's do bagels. So I lost the rock, paper, scissors.
So this could be Kettle House Bagel Shop.
Yeah, it probably would have been a different name. Although you do boil bagels in kettles, right?
I mean,
you boil them.
I only had a small dalliance of bagel making in my college days, so I don't.
That house. The bagels that would come out.
That does
wrong.
Not sound as appealing.
No.
Yeah, I don't think.
Not
I think
at
you
all.
Would have gone out of business. Not you would have made it 22 years. Sorry, Susie.
Hey, if the bagels were awesome,
yeah.
You just never know.
Sure, Vat House bagels.
The Vat House. It sounds like a Norwegian like
right.
calling you fat.
The Vat House bagels.
God, they made you Vat. So yeah, that's we wanted. Yeah, you know, literally throw a dart at a dartboard. I mean, we didn't have brewing experience. We didn't have business experience. I have an English degree from college. My husband has a physics degree from college. That makes a brewery.
There you go. Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not? So, and we even started when the craft brewing industry was in a downturn.
Sure.
So, it made no sense.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
But it worked.
It worked only because I credit my husband with having it still working because, like, he would come home at night. So he was working here and I was working other jobs, you know, to pay the rent and pay the bills and stuff. So I would come home, how was your day, honey? And he'd be laying on his back on the floor. I'm not going back.
Oh, no.
I am not going back. I'm like, good, give me the keys.
Yeah, burn
like,
the billy down, collect the insurance
bad.
Money.
Right, yeah. It was just, it was rough. And so I think we have a little bit of PTSD from that because people that are opening breweries now, like that opened maybe in the last 5 years, are like, man, this is awesome.
Yeah.
This is great.
Sure.
You hang a brewery sign out and the next day
they
you're
just,
packed.
Yeah.
It's so great. And we're making money and we're paying bills. And I tell you what, it was not that way for us. The first
right.
10 years, literally, it was drumming fingers and whistling.
So, yeah, I mean, you guys paved the road, though, for a lot of people here then. Really, a lot of, you know, for people
right.
that are able to do it now with such ease. I mean, someone had to hoe that road for people to be able to come through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't disagree with you.
Yeah.
I'll also say that that I think there was an element of timing
sure.
to it. You know, we could have pretended like we were paving the road and then gone under after 5 years and the craft brewing industry still would have grown and people
yeah.
still would have, you know, yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, I think without the breweries established here, though, it would have been harder to convince people to open. It would have been hard, I think, in this time and age for someone to be like, I'm going to be the first one here. Like, there was already kind of a beer scene here, although more
yeah.
quietly. And
yeah.
then, so it's easier to jump off of that than jump off the ledge
mm-hmm.
alone.
Yeah. You know who I credit, you know, paving the way is like a brewery like Sierra Nevada.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
that started kind of the way they started. Bootstrapping it, welding random pieces of metal together and making beer and then distributing it out, you know. We were, like, our footprint was really tiny.
Yeah.
Basically within 10 block radius of this right now, so I don't know how much influence we had, but I appreciate.
All right.
I'm getting argumentative.
Yeah, these already half a beer down.
Doesn't take long. No, you're
so
wrong.
Is the competition pretty strong now?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The competition is. I feel like in Montana right now. I can really only speak for Montana,
sure.
and maybe even like Western Montana because we've just only recently gone into Eastern Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Billings. We started distributing there in February,
mm-hmm.
January, February. But every taproom brewery that opens up, you know, and they're all pretty much opening like that. I don't think anybody has opened saying, well, actually, Missoula Brewing sort of did this. They had this this vision of just opening as a production brewery. You know, we're opening, we're buying a canning line, or, you know, they went big
yeah.
right at the start. And so that's the only brewery I can think of that did that. But most of them are opening as, you know, we just want to have a little brew system in the corner. We want it to be a community place. And we
yeah.
want to give back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The same
yeah.
kind of the same shtick. I think it's super competitive. Every time
yeah.
a new one opens, we see our tap rooms drop a little.
Because everyone's interested in
the new girl
what
at the dance.
Going
yeah.
on
yes.
somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah, let's see what they have on tap.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what they're about. So the question now is like, how do you differentiate yourself?
Right.
And you know, we said for a long time, well, we'll just make the best beer. Well,
yeah.
Having good beer, like they say at the Craft Brewers Conference every year. having quality product is table stakes. You have to have that. If you don't have that, you're not even in the game.
Right.
Yeah. So, so what? You have quality beer. What else?
Yeah.
You know, and right now, my husband and I have just been kind of talking about that, like, okay, for the next 20 years, what differentiates us? What are we going to do that means something to us and maybe resonates with customers and with people? And the vision that we have now is to work toward becoming a carbon neutral brewery.
Okay.
And showing that that can be done.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of larger breweries with larger pocketbooks that can do that. We want to try to figure out how to make it more accessible to smaller businesses.
Yeah. How would you go? How would that work? What is the?
Well, we've just thought of this, but I just saw Tim. I wish he was here. Okay. That's sort of his realm, but and so I feel like I'm going to say something that people listening are going to go, that is not how
our listeners don't fact check anything. It's okay. They're probably drunk right now while they listen to this. It's fine.
Good. So anyway,
you can say whatever you want.
We're gonna have goats, and they're just gonna eat the grass.
Perfect. No. Goats and space dust.
No. We have a very small wind generator that we got from the university. Used to have it as a. Pretty sure it was a tool for students to use, you know, for to study energy, and so we're gonna install that. We're gonna do some solar. We're gonna try and recapture our hot water. And again, I haven't delved into the specifics of how to do this, so I feel like I just
you just
said
this
that,
is just what
and then you're
told.
Like, "Oh, how are you gonna do that?" I'm like, "We haven't thought of that yet.
It's your vision.
We're just starting to do that.
It's just a nice thought."
Yeah. No, but but literally, my husband goes to sleep at night reading books on energy.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, you said physicist, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so he's working.
He's
all right.
Super into that.
I feel like it'll work out then.
Yep. So don't ask me. He's gonna do it.
You're just there.
It's gonna happen.
Along for the ride.
He said something the other day about carbon credits. Do you know anything about? Have you guys heard about that?
So does. Well, I can refer to a couple things, but maybe like carbon credits, does it mean like with the power company? Like you can actually install batteries that, like Tesla has a battery that will store energy from the power company on non-peak hours at a cheaper rate. So that's when it's less expensive, and then you reuse it at a lesser rate. And so you're using energy, less energy, more efficiently.
Okay.
So probably things like that. Okay. That's usually how.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, we have solar panels on the roof at our house, and I know that we just feed the power company with excess energy that we're not using.
Do they pay you guys?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, of course. Yes, yeah, they should.
So, so in the summer when we were, or in the winter, no, in the summer, because we get sun, way more sun in the summer, we were running our air conditioner, and now it's like $20 a month.
Yeah.
And so we feel so good about that, because it's like, okay, I feel better about being cool when the sun is helping me do that,
right.
Not the power company, not the coal.
Right.
And I feel, I have to say, I'm a little hard on myself because I feel like, and I know this isn't a political show, but with the state...
We get political sometimes, it's okay.
With the state of the world right now, and I do believe in climate change, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it's real, and I think that I'm feeling a little silly going, carbon credits? I don't know. I don't know how we're going to do it. Like, I think we should all be way more knowledgeable about this stuff than we are.
Yeah, it's definitely aware and...
we're starting.
Right. It's coming around. I think more so it's coming around. I mean, I think it's become almost impossible to deny that there is something happening. And people who are willfully ignorant, probably.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a mass effect by humans or a cyclical nature of the earth or something in between those two things. Or the Anunnaki are coming back to kill us all. One of those
I haven't
three
thought
things.
Of that one.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. Well, I have
they
two...
like beer too, I heard.
Oh, so, good. Well, let's, we should... What are they... What style?
Mostly lagers. They're a lot in the lagers.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe if we just do a kick-ass lager, then we'll be
saved.
Yeah,
you're fine. You just have a, like, you gift them the lager. It's your, yeah.
Okay, and we can do good. That. We can do that. No, I have two. I have two things that I love to say, none of which are original to me. I've just heard them along the way on my path around the sun. But if you were a true environmentalist, you'd kill yourself. Because
fair.
You cannot live
fair.
Without yeah. making an impact.
Yep.
And I forgot the second one.
you heard it here,
it
folks.
It might come back to me.
Put quotation marks around it. Susie Rizza says,
God.
I think she says for environmentalists to kill themselves and forget the rest. That's
well, and if you do that, then you're done. So who cares what the second one?
We can be like, throw out our Nikes and one big Heaven's Gate cult. Just right. The whole world, right? Perfect. Well, we are going to take a break here in a minute, and then we're going to come back and drink some of the beers. But real quick, I want to talk to you about your taste in beer.
Mm-hmm.
So what is, we'll go craft beer first. Outside of what you guys make, mm-hmm. craft beer-wise, what is Susie Rizza drink?
Mm-hmm. Where is Susie Rizza? Is she on the river?
Ooh,
is
God,
she
I like that.
Hiking? Is she in a bar? And she all she has to do that afternoon is go back to the hotel room and take a nap.
I must say, I like you said hiking, because I had an argument with someone literally yesterday that they argue that you can't drink while you hike. And I'm like, of course you can drink while you hike. That's why you hike. Well, not the only reason, but you can you have some beers while you hike.
Yeah.
Wherever Susie Rizza wants to be.
Okay, I would love to be hiking or on the river.
Okay.
So, in that case, and outside Kettle House beers.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's talk craft beer. What is what do you?
So I love the Sierra Nevada Nooner.
Okay.
Can't get that a lot here anymore.
Okay. I'm
pretty bummed.
Not even Orange Street? Orange Street doesn't carry it?
You know, it was in, from what I know, it was in like a 12, it was a sampler pack.
Oh, the variety
pack.
Yeah, okay.
And there were like two Nooners in it. And I like all Sierra Nevada's beers, but I wanted more Nooner.
More Nooner.
Yeah, they used to sell a 6-pack in bottles here, and I haven't seen that in a long time. So, that one, and, I have to say that would be my go-to craft beer, and I'm maybe betraying my whole industry by saying that if I'm on the river in the sun, a lot of times I'm going with super light, really mega large domestic.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's pretty typical. Yeah. I mean, I know I'm a craft beer guy, but when I'm on the river a couple hours, you don't want something.
Yeah.
You don't want to drink like. You know, an Irish stout on the river
and
all day.
And it's not necessarily the flavor or the taste or the heaviness, it's the alcohol content.
That will,
Because that's what just... I'm a lightweight.
Sustain.
I'm a lightweight. And I need to be able to row the boat and drive home.
Right,
Yeah. So.
I like how you go so far as to row boats. I just float. I don't even row. I'm just like, trust the river. We'll get there. Whatever the river says, I believe in nature. Just let it happen.
Right. It will go downhill.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, the river, not your trip.
Right. Well, both technically, I guess.
You never know. That's why my husband married me, because I row. He fishes.
All right.
And
yeah.
I row.
That's a good
start. That was 20-some years ago.
That must have been the most romantic wedding vows ever.
That was romantic.
She rows. I fish. All right, where's the ring?
But I got to say, after 25 years of marriage, it's like, what side of the river do you want to be on?
No.
Then freaking cast it over there. I don't have to row your ass anywhere. Learn how to throw that fly.
Nice that romance never dies.
Yeah. And he's like, Jesus Christ, I'll row. Fine.
No. I'll be over here drinking beer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay, elsewhere though, we went to Ireland and Guinness. You've never had Guinness in Ireland? It's worth the price of a ticket and a week of a hotel. Yeah. Oh man, it's
definitely
good.
Different.
It's good.
Now they serve it at their like room temperature, right? Is it served chilled?
It's
or
not super ice cold, but not necessarily room temperature. It does take 15 minutes to get it though, because it's on nitro.
Yeah,
so you order a Guinness and then you go sit down and you order your food and then your beer comes like almost when your food's gonna come.
And then, when you get the beer, you're like, can I have another one?
Probably, that would probably be wise, yeah. But I just really liked it. over there. Okay. So that was great. And honestly, the IPAs right now, the IPAs that are super high IBUs,
yeah.
I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
I think, I know IPAs are like the hottest style right now, and they have been for a while. I also
too long,
am
I think.
Starting to see a little bit of a change in that. Like, you know, we have a lot of people now saying, lagers, why don't, you know, we need a good lager.
Yeah.
We do have an IPA on right now, though. At the Northside location, it's a New England IPA, and people hear New England IPA and they go, no, because it's maybe a little bit trendy, but I don't,
sure.
Not for Montana, I don't think yet,
yeah.
In the East, but it's very cloudy.
Okay.
And we have like 2.5 pounds per barrel of hops, but after the boil.
Uh-huh.
So after the boil, aroma, it's more aroma. So we have a ton of hops in it, but you drink it, and it is smooth, and it doesn't burn your taste buds off.
Do you know what kind of hops you're using?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Green ones?
They're green. I know what kind of malt we're using.
Okay, that's all right.
But no, I don't.
Don't test you, that's okay.
Yeah. For Hedrew was here, he could tell you.
That's okay. I think the IPA thing is slowing down a little. There's still, I think it'll always be there. I feel like sours are coming around a bit, which I personally love. I really like.
Do you like sours?
I like sours a lot.
Okay.
I mean, 5 years ago I'm like a sour hipster. Mm-hmm. I was liked it before it was cool.
Okay.
And I used to go to Portland a lot. There's a couple breweries in Portland that do almost exclusively things like that.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
So they can go a lot of directions. You can get really good or really bad. Too.
Sure.
So yeah. And you know, even the Gozas and things like that that are sour adjacent are coming around a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fine line on a sour on purpose beer and a sour on accident
right.
beer.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The on accident ones are like, ugh.
Not as good.
Right.
Not as good.
Right. So. We just released last weekend, cut me off if you need to. We had a sour, you know what? I don't know if it's on tap here. We had a double hull IPA that had been aged for like 14 months a whiskey barrel. We put apricot in it and put Brettanomyces in it.
Yeah. Came out real good.
Uh-huh.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
With the apple whiskey and then with the IPA, that kind of snap of the IPA.
Yeah.
That's an interesting, I don't think I ever heard anyone using IPA to try it sour.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd be curious to have that. You have it anywhere?
We might have it on tap here.
If not,
when
I'll,
we do our sampling,
I'll travel to one of the other breweries.
See,
so.
Yeah.
All right, well, with that in mind, we are going to take a quick break, and we will come back with Susie again, and we're going to drink some beers and talk about some of the beers.
Okay.
All right, we'll see you guys just after these commercial breaks.
Hi, I'm Ash.
Hi, I'm Steven.
I write fan fiction.
I'm a podcaster and a comedian, and neither of us
have seen a lot of movies, so we decided to get caught up
on our catalog of movies, and while talking about it,
I decided that we should podcast all of it.
And now, 2 years later, we're still at it.
And we're kind of a little bit more professional than ever. He wants to touch the...
Hiney.
Bryan Cranston, the one that knocks,
that is...
and the one that sends the Power Rangers out to go touch things.
I don't know how to... He wants to get vertical on the Limbo Shack.
What the...
She is your soulmate because the Lord has told me...
What? What? He wants to jump through that tent and into the canyon and fly away while holding a ketchup bottle. I don't know how it works.
He wants to Left Eye Lopez for Destiny's Child.
So join us every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher,
or here on the Pants Pending Studios podcast network,
which you can find at pantspending.com.
All right, welcome back to the show, guys. Thanks for hanging out through that brief commercial break. And as always, go to pantspending.com, check out all the shows on the network, as well as go to patreon.com/pantspending. You can donate, do a one-time donation, or subscribe to any of the shows. Yeah, that's all I'm going to talk about for now. Get the commercials. We'll get the commercials later. We got beer in front of us. That's more important. We are now here with Ryan Weingart. Ryan, and what's your position here with the brewery?
I'm the tap room manager at the South Side, the original location of the Kettle House Brewery.
All right. And Ryan is going to walk us through. We got four beers in front of us. We're going to drink these and talk about them. Hannah, you ready?
Oh, I'm so ready.
You ready?
Ready.
This is my life. Work is tough sometimes.
Right?
So
I know,
if you guys can deal with this, we can work together through it.
I think we can make it. People actually ask you, like, do you enjoy what you do? I'm like, I get to travel around, do comedy, and drink beer with brewers. I'm like, yeah. It's great.
Yeah. I'm not stressed out very often.
Yeah, this is pretty amazing. I managed to find everything I love to do and put it all in one adventure. So
that's a good thing.
All right, so where are we starting, right?
Let's actually start with number three. We've got four beers in front of us, but we're going to start with number three. So this is our fresh Bongwater Pale Ale. This is one of our more recent beers that we can. We can four of our mainstays, and actually now a fifth. A lager that we've presented at our new amphitheater.
Okay.
But this beer is one of my favorite beers. It is a long-time performer here in our tap room. Fresh Bongwater Pale Ale. We also have an Old Bongwater Porter as its far end of the spectrum counterpart. It's light, approachable, not particularly hoppy. We use a hemp seed oil in it. The Fresh Bongwater can has got a giant pot leaf on it. It sells itself. But then you crack it, and you realize how good a beer it is. I think that's what brings people back to it. The can gets people stoked on it, and then the flavor of the beer really brings people back in.
Brand recognition.
I guess let's have a taste and take it from there.
That is really good. It's got a nice kind of malty back to it.
It's got a malty, I say kind of a carbohydrate or biscuity flavor, and that's from the hemp seed oil. So this beer, a long, long time ago, was the Kettle House Blonde, and then we added the hemp seed oil, and so that's what has become of it. And again, this has been a long time cult classic here in my tap room. I love this beer. It's easy drinking, and people, as it's been out in the market, have shown that they also love it.
Yeah. The first thing I note is that as a pale, the nice malty smooth kind of crispness of it, so many pails out there are just disguised as another version of an IPA.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, here's our five IPAs in a pail.
Yes, exactly. So this is a dumbed down IPA we call a pail.
But
this is balanced.
Yeah.
And I think that we, our brewers and brewsters, they hang their hats on the fact that we make well-balanced beers.
And that's important because having a beer properly categorized is really important to find the beer for people who aren't as experienced as
Absolutely. And though this beer plays itself well to an entry-class craft beer drinker, it also works for someone with a more complex palate.
Yeah, this is definitely approachable for someone who is, you know, used to your typical domestics and
Absolutely.
Wants to find something that they can kind of tiptoe into the craft beer world.
Absolutely.
It gives them, it's nothing that's going to be too dark or too heavy or too anything, but it's great beer.
Yeah.
Hannah?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
Good.
I think it is really smooth. I'm really entry. Craft beer, super entry.
We're getting a feedback right now.
Well, good. And again, this is one of those beers that when someone comes in and goes, you know what? I want like the lightest thing.
Yeah.
I don't really drink craft beer. And I give them this and say, hey, just have a sip. Tell me what you feel. We'll go from there. And typically, there's no deviation. People are like, oh, that's great. I'll start with that.
Yeah.
A great starter beer.
Yeah.
And like I said, also very complex if you really get into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it definitely has... A lot going on.
The subtlety of the oil.
Yeah. So, as I said, this is long time been a cult classic here in our tap room. It has been the best seller for many years. Moving on, segueing into beer number four, the Citra IPA has now become my number one seller here in this tap room.
All right.
So, Citra has been this big buzzword in brewing for some time. It is a varietal of hop that is a rather newer varietal of hop in the last few years that people have just been add Citra and sell beer.
Right.
And, you know, we kind of shied away from that for some time, but then we started experimenting with it, and I think this is our fifth or maybe sixth iteration. I'd have to ask a brewer specifically.
Okay.
But this beer has become the number one seller currently in my tap room.
What was the number one seller before? The Cold Smoke?
The Fresh Bongwater. Our Cold Smoke is our big number one out in the market overall. But in this room, the original Kettle House, it was fresh, and now in the last 6-8 months, it's been Citra.
What's the, do you know what the IBUs on that Citra is?
Just shy of 50, about 45, 50, off, you know, IBUs is such an estimate.
Sure.
We try to get it in there, but about 45 to 50.
That's really pretty reasonable considering what people try and do with IPAs,
yes.
Which we were talking with Susie a little bit earlier on the show. Instead of just trying to, it's like this race to blow out your taste buds. And like, you're
exactly.
not, it's like with, like, I love wings, right? I love wings, but I don't want the atomic
the show?
Wings. No, like, the show.
Oh, yeah.
Hayden, Christian, Hayden Christian Church is the man.
I was going to say, you know, I really enjoyed that as a child.
You just dated yourself.
Brian Weber was
scratch that.
I just named two cast members. And Timothy Dalton. I named three.
There you go.
Shit. God, I'm dating myself, too.
Man, you guys were...
When you were sick at school, that's what you watched at home. At least that's what I watched at home.
I love that show. I used to do marathons on USA.
Yeah. Anywho.
But yeah, they... You know, you have this this balance instead of just trying to blow out your taste. This race to just...
Well, you know, you get into this... 70, 80, 90, 120 IBUs. I don't want anything to do with that.
Right.
I enjoy drinking beer, and to be quite honest, I enjoy drinking a multitude of beers.
Yeah.
Or a myriad of different beers, and you get into that much bitterness, and you're just done. There's nowhere to go back to or to step up to.
Yeah.
You're just blown out.
Right.
Again, our brewers and brewsters, I really... kudos to them. They make well-balanced beers.
Yeah.
Beers for beer drinkers. And we have a lot of true beer drinkers in here. So I think that's why this has been such a hit. It's got, good balance. It's not particularly malty. It's a more bright, resiny IPA for us. Our double hall is our go-to standard, which is we say is our American take on a traditional English IPA. So
okay.
It's malty and hoppy. Again, that's about 50 IBUs. Way back in the day when we introduced that, it was a hop monster, and now, again, a beer drinker's IPA, something you can step up to something else or down or around to something else and not be fully blown out. But the Citra's gone really well for us. We've really enjoyed it.
Do you guys have people asking for things more hoppier occasionally, or is it pretty much they're pretty happy with what?
We do occasionally. Again, you know, we hate just chasing that trend, you know, like, hoppy is hoppy. That's what everybody wants. To an extent, I agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go with the trends a bit, but keeping it well balanced is something that I think we try to keep in our vision.
Well, I think one of the important things with anything, you know, beer or anything really in life, is doing the best version of what you do. Just find out what you're best at and just do the best version of that. And you can, that recipe never loses.
Agreed.
Like, you know,
agreed.
So.
Well, and again, here we are now segueing to another beer, our dry hop. This is the Loral dry hop pale.
This is number two?
That's number two on here. And this is iteration number five of our dry hops. We at the Kettle House are so incredibly fortunate to have acquired Tim Mason, our new head brewer from Revolution Brewing in Chicago. Nobody's ever left Revolution Brewing. We're very proud and excited and I think rejuvenated to have him here. He started this dry hopping series.
Yeah.
I guess a little bit for people who don't know what dry hop is. You know, you see dry hopped on beers a lot. Essentially, dry hopping is a post-fermentation adding more hops in.
Right.
And it's not so much for that big, bitter, bold flavor, but for the aroma.
Yeah, the big floral.
The big floral aromas. And again, this is our fifth iteration. This is the Loral. That is the varietal of hop. And it's balanced.
Yeah.
It's more of an aroma thing where you don't get that kick of bitterness.
I don't know if I've ever heard of a Loral hop. Is that a newer version?
I don't really know its lineage, to be quite honest. I have seen it in a couple of beers.
Okay.
But it's very resiny. It's got some piney notes to it for me.
Yeah, because I would say I don't know if this is because of the hops, but this gives a little more amber color. Which generally comes from the, I would imagine, from the hops.
From the hops and the malt.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit more in this malt bill.
You can definitely tell it's got a little more bite at the end, a little more floral right up front on the palate. But still, again, like I said, it doesn't
not too powerful. Just gives that that real good floral note. And that, I've never had that hop. I don't believe, but it's...
We've done a myriad of them thus far, and we're going to continue to do them. Today, I went with a bunch of brewers and brewsters, and we chopped down a whole bunch of fresh hops that we're going to make a wet hop beer.
Okay.
So that is full hop cones going into the boil, right? So I look forward to having that beer sitting next to, side by side, this dry hop beer, which is more aromatic, more on the nose, whereas this wet hop beer is going to be hoppy and fantastic and a little more lush.
A little more rich in that.
A little more rich in that, yeah. But it's going to be great to be able to have both of those side by side.
Yeah.
Again, we're really excited to have Tim Mason here from Revolution. He's got his eye on the prize, and he's helping us do new things, which I think is important that we keep moving.
Yeah. Well, that is. So we kind of talked to Susie about this earlier, but we'll ask you while you're here, too. As far as trends in beer, I mean, obviously IPAs was really big for a while. Sours are kind of coming around. Your opinion as a craft beer lover and working in a brewery, are there any trends coming on the cusp that are, you know, good, bad, and different, or anything that is, adventurous that you'd like to see played with a little bit?
There are some... Okay, so the big hoppy thing, I can get on board with that, and I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm over it. I've been there. I've tasted a lot of beer. I'm a pretty fortunate fella in that I get to taste a lot of different beer, right? Our lead brewer here, Tim Peterson, we have three Tims just to make it nice and confusing. Tim Peterson has been working really hard on our lagers and, in particular, our Pilsner.
Okay.
It takes a lot more time. It takes a lot more effort. It takes a lot more attention to detail to make a good lager. And he's been working really hard on our Pilsner. We have the Common Lager, which is like a California steam beer, and then our new Fish on Pilsner. And I just really enjoy a light ABV beer that's got a little bite to it, but it's easy drinking, 4.9%, drink it all day, and doesn't have any off flavors.
Right.
You know what I mean? I taste a lot of lagers that have these off flavors because they weren't paid attention to.
Sure. And I've actually been heard from a lot of people that a lager is one of the most difficult
it is.
To brew. Well, to get that balance.
To get the proper balance.
Yeah.
To get it to not have off flavors. Also, just to have the space to store a lager. Lagering essentially just means... Yeah, that's right, girl. Holding...
Avery Jean's chipping
that's,
in. Over
that's here. My daughter over there. I apologize. To have the space and the time to hold that beer to do what it needs to do to ferment at a cooler temperature essentially just takes more time, effort, and meticulous attention to detail.
Right.
So I'm into that. Maybe it's because my wife would like me to drink less beer, and I like to drink a high quantity of beer and still function.
Sure, that makes sense.
But however, I've really been enjoying that. And I haven't really actually been enjoying the sour beers.
All right.
I absolutely would not claim to be an expert in any way, shape, or form on the sours. I'm trying to learn more about them. So this, the Sour Magnolia.
Ooh, God, that's a nice...
So this is the second of our sour series that we just started. And this is the second one that we have bottled in 750 milliliter bottles.
Okay.
We did individually numbered 1 through 50. We put this one out last Saturday. I was absolutely out by, I think, Monday, maybe even Sunday.
Wow.
So there's been a lot of excitement around it here in the community. I think sour beers are definitely a trend.
Yeah.
But I think they're a trend that's worthwhile, again, if meticulous attention to detail is happening.
Sours can go a lot of directions, like we were talking before the break, and I think a good sour is really, really one of the best flavor profiles and beers you can do, in my opinion. I'm a malty guy when it comes to beer. I like a brown or good porter. That's kind of my sweet spot.
Uh-huh.
But the sours on the opposite end of the spectrum for me are just an amazing beer. Just, Hannah, smell that beer.
I love the kind of
it's that funk of that, you know, wild yeast and strains and things they have to use that just have interesting.
And remember, these beers, you know, archaically, eons ago, were made in open vats up high where these random, you know, bacteria would flow through the beer to cool it down.
Right.
Like the air is going through there, and whatever is out there is going in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's like just a grab bag.
And again, I say this meticulous attention to detail. Well, how the hell do you deal with that? That's just whatever you got in the air. You know, certain regions have certain flavors, and now we can try to manipulate those flavors a little bit by adding these bacteria or adding fruit or adding them to a barrel. But this one originally was an IPA.
Oh, is this the one you did with the apple whiskey?
Well, it's an apricot.
Apricot,
I'm sorry.
Apricot in a whiskey barrel.
In a whiskey barrel. And it's just, you know, the proof is in the pudding. It went very quickly.
That's an amazing beer. So is this something we're going to keep brewing?
This is something that we're going to keep trying.
Okay.
Again, you know, you can only do so much to really hone that in. Once you figure out something that's really good, hopefully you've got that all written down on exactly how you did it. You can source those barrels again. You can source that fruit and that bacteria and the whole nine yards.
One of my favorite things about this beer is that you don't taste whiskey, but you taste a little whiskey bite right at the back of your throat on the end of every single drink.
You get a little bit of heat, whiskey heat.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like right on the top of your palate.
I get it right at the back of my throat at the end of it. Just a little bit.
Well, that and the like side pucker.
That is
very curious.
That's an amazing beer.
I've never had anything like this.
Yeah. And again, they're an acquired taste.
Yeah.
You know, there's some good ones and there's some really, really bad ones. But that's just the way it goes, right?
Yeah.
It's an experiment here. But this one, I think, went quite fantastic.
Yeah.
And again, the proof's in the pudding. We sold it out in a day and a half, two days max, and we're going to continue to do that.
Can I ask where you got the whiskey barrels from?
I don't know specifically where that one was sourced from.
Okay.
That's actually kind of hard information to get sometimes.
Sure.
But we bought them from a barrel broker, someone who sells barrels.
Yeah.
And we have a myriad of different barrels right now going on with tons of different kinds of beers. Again, having Tim Mason here has been great. He's kind of trying to dial it in and get it to be a little more regimented, and I look forward to the future with that. People are enjoying it.
We did another sour release about a month ago, again in 750 milliliter bottles.
Yeah.
And then we're doing another one in about 6 weeks. So sort of starting for the fall, you know, the sour program, but limited release of each one.
Can you tell us about the other sours, what they were...
So we've only done one other one, and to be honest, I might have already put that out of my memory.
I don't remember. What was
are the
that?
Ones coming the same as this then? Or
no, they will be different.
Okay, do you know, are you
I'm not
familiar?
They kind of give me a week before, and I like it that way.
Okay.
They're like, here it is, taste it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about it? and typically, thus far, I've felt really great about them, and so have our patrons.
That's it to me. How much of this do you have left?
There might be 5 gallons left in a keg for on tap, on site consumption only. We do not allow growlers or crowlers or any of that. We don't we don't have much of it, so we don't let much of it go.
So I might hang around after this and drink some of that.
That's probably a wise
idea.
You like
that,
huh? Really good.
This is gonna sound super naive, but can you? Because I just don't know. But can you use any fruits like for?
Sure, you could add any fruit you want.
Yeah.
And essentially the beer has gone sour, so bacteria has kind of run wild, run amok in there, and that kind of puckery flavor that you get is from those bacteria.
Yeah.
I mean, this was an IPA originally,
right.
You know, pretty typical.
Yeah.
And then with, you know, adding, putting it in a barrel, a little bit of bacteria, and it's a whole new world.
Yeah.
And they're all very, very different.
Yeah.
And like I said, I've had some really great ones, some not so great ones. This sour is kind of a new beer for myself personally. It hasn't really been on my radar for too long, but in the last year or so, I've tasted some good ones, some really good ones.
Yeah, if for the people that can dial it in and make a good one, it is, because we were talking, Hannah and I were talking in the break about styles of beers. Now there's not really, you're at a point where there's probably not really new styles of beer coming out. There's variations, you know, the Northwest IPA, the West Coast IPA. I feel like sour is one of the few really standalone styles of beer that has come out in the last few years that yep. could be a new segment, could be considered a new yeah. segment.
Well, and if you, you know, being a guy who works at a brewery, I look at every grocery shelf, I look at every beer bottle shelf, the amount of sours that I now currently see on the shelf, as opposed to 5 years ago,
oh.
is 500%.
Absolutely.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? Where at that point it was still kind of just getting into the IPA world, things are starting to ramp up in the hops.
Yep.
Now things have really ramped up. I mean, there's 20 different sours you can choose from yeah. at our local grocery store.
Right.
Which is a well-stocked beer grocery store.
Yeah, and 5 years ago, you probably wouldn't have found any.
No.
You would have
definitely not packaged.
Right.
You might be able to find them in a tap.
Right, yeah.
But now, yeah, you can find them packaged readily.
Yeah, but before most people maybe had a random sour or something. Now you find almost everyone has a sour or Goza or something yeah. to that effect on tap now.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things you guys, you know, obviously you guys aren't brewing directly, but in the tap room you probably have some influence, I imagine. What are some of the things you want to see or thinking about experimenting with, you know, with the beers for down the road?
Well, the dry hopping program has been great. That's been very well received in my tap room. This is a blue collar room. Working guys who want a nice, good, solid 4.9 to 6.5% easy yeah. drinking, good flavor beer. I hope to continue the dry hopping series. I hope to continue the sours. Again, I'm really stoked on the lagers.
Yeah.
Just because now that we've had this problem as the Kettle House for a long time. People love our beer, and we haven't been able to make enough to distribute it to all of Montana.
Yeah.
We've now solved that problem by building this new, awesome, state-of-the-art brewery and canning facility. So that takes pressure off of my specific brewers who brew for my tap.
Sure.
So
sure.
now there's time, space, and some energy to devote to the lagers. And it's kind of cool to see, because we're an ale house traditionally. It's quick, it's easy, and it's easier to do. Now we're kind of getting into some of the lagers that are really have been knocking my socks off.
Yeah.
And that's kind of weird to say because it's a simple beer. But again, it's hard to make.
Right.
It's hard to make that simple beer taste correct and not have off flavors. And I like that.
Well, it is nice to have a brewery that's dedicated to, you know, like even sours, you know, the aging process can take time and things like
yeah.
that. So you're being able to do that is a dedication to beers that are not as simple. You know, there's a lot of in my travels I've talked to a lot of brewers, and most of the guys that have been around a long time always say, yeah, IPAs also got very prevalent because they're one of the easiest beers to make.
Yeah, you put a bunch of preservatives,
right,
i.e. hops in it, and wow.
And look, it all comes out. Like,
it's a bitter pale.
Right, and it just comes out like you, and it works. So I mean, obviously, it, you know, it got wildly popular out of kind of ease of turnover. So
yep.
Not to say there's not obviously fantastic IPAs out there, but
they're all.
Yeah.
And you know, again, our double hull IPA, I'm pretty positive, Susie, that this September, that's in a couple of days, is 9 years that I've been in here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be.
So I've been here for 9 years, and the beer that made me want to work at this brewery is double hull IPA.
Okay.
Because it's a well-balanced, well-made, absolutely effing delicious IPA.
Award winner.
Beer drinking. And I was going to say, we got a World Beer Cup gold medal a couple of years ago.
I heard that's pretty good.
And it is awesome. And here at the Tap House, it's also unfiltered. I prefer it. It's delicious. It's chewy. It's hoppy. It's got great aroma. And it's also got a great malt backbone to it.
Okay. So how many beers do you guys have that are staples made consistently all year long? And how many are kind of, you know, we'll call seasonal for lack of a better word?
So again, I'll say this. We have four mainstay beers that are in 16-ounce cans.
So those are the kind of your flagship.
We just added the fifth, which is a lager. It's called the Bonner Lager. We opened a new amphitheater out at our brand new facility on the Big Blackfoot River.
Uh-huh.
And we added that. So now we have those five beers that are out in the market. So those are Cold Smoke, Eddie Out Pale, Double Hall IPA, Bonner Lager, and the Fresh Bong Water Pale Ale.
Okay.
So those are always there.
You guys don't do the Bong Water or the
So the porter is the far end of the spectrum of the bong water.
Do you guys can that?
We do not can old bong water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nope.
Okay.
It's been on tap. It's usually on tap here.
Yeah.
Gosh, I can't answer that question.
A lot. Okay.
We have a regular, what I would say, rotating mainstay, stable of beers.
Okay.
That's probably 20 beers deep over here.
Mm-hmm.
We've been around for over 21 years.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of years.
22 years next weekend.
Yeah, 22 years
this next weekend. This weekend. Yeah.
We got a lot of beer that people regularly look forward to.
Yeah, did they really look forward to?
You know, I'm seeing on Twitter, on Untappd, I see a lot of, hey, you're trying this Cold Smoke beer. You know, if you're from out of state, you're probably familiar with Cold Smoke, potentially familiar with Double Hall, Eddie Out, Fresh Bong Water, because that's, you know, people travel through Montana, they load their trunk up with some Montana beer, and then they take it wherever they're going.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of that. Maybe those are the ones that people might know us for. But the tap rooms are... The tap room's probably a lot of places you go that have production breweries too. The tap room's like a whole nother world.
Really?
To a brewery.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, you can see, you go into a grocery store and you see what's on the shelf. That might be a very small percentage of what that brewery actually brews.
Well, I'd like to think of the tap room kind of as the crystal ball of the future for beer.
Sure.
We get to be the incubator with all these random varieties. Some of them are such a hit. Some of them are just, you know, we tried that, it didn't quite work.
Yeah.
Let's take that feedback, build on it, or scrap that and move on to something different.
Sure.
The incubator that is the tap room is really helpful to us as a packaging brewery to learn what we need to put in the market and what people want. And maybe some of those wilder ideas that go off in here that we would have never been like, oh, we should package that as a seasonal. We learn that.
Yeah. That's a good beta testing ground for anything. So,
agreed.
Very good. So, Ryan, we kind of had Susie's take on this earlier. We'll grab your opinion on this. Moving forward, what do you see for Kettle House in the future?
Wow, that's an
incredible, and you can use
incredible questions.
Open ending as you want.
What do I see for the Kettle House in the future? Great things. Again, I've been here for 9 years. I've worked long and hard here, and I'm really proud to be a part of this family. And it is a small family. That is growing exponentially as we speak with the new brewery and the amphitheater. I see events paired with beer that is the Montana outdoor lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I just see endless opportunity for beer producers and beer drinkers alike. We have a great thing going in this community. There's a lot of great beer, which keeps us on our toes. You know, you can't. There's no resting on your on your laurels here. You got to keep going, and I see a future of great beer, good music, and great outdoor experiences with our beers.
All right, I like it. Hannah, do you have any last questions?
No last questions. Just thank you for
my pleasure
letting us sample these great beers.
This is what I do. This is what I do.
There you go. Susie, anything else you want to add before we go? Where can people find you guys? Facebook, Twitter, et cetera? Any events
we've
coming
got,
up? Shout them out.
Yep, we've got Facebook. We've got a Kettle House Facebook page. And then we have a Facebook page devoted to each of our two tap rooms right now. We also are on Instagram with Kettle House. And Twitter, Kettle House Brew. Can't think of any major events we have coming up.
Well, we do tomorrow night. I know it's short notice, but coming to you from the past. We have a big hop picking party for all those hops that we went and cut from the vine. And then in about 3 weeks or so, we'll have a delicious wet hop beer out.
Perfect.
So if you're in town in Missoula in the next 3 weeks, come by and try that.
All right, guys. Well, come down. When you're in Missoula, I know we've got some listeners over here too. Everyone, check out the Kettle House Brewery. They've got 3 locations in the area and distribute all over Montana now. Definitely check them out. Great beer, great people. And yeah, why not, right?
Thank you, Dees and Hannah.
All right, thanks, guys.
Pleasure
Susie, Ryan. Yeah, pleasure to be here. Thank you for me doing this. And all right, guys, and we will see you all next week.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!